गच्छे वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमस्कार आशिषम ईशा मनवे कारणात्मने नमो परमाया बृहते कृष्णया कुंथा मेरसे पुरुषाया पुराणाया संख्या योगेश्वराया नमस्त आशिनम ईशा मनवे कारणात्मने नमो धर्माय बृहते कृष्णाय कुंतमेरसे पुरुषाय पुराणाय संख्य योगेश्वराय च नमस्ता आशिषम ईशा मनवे करणात्मने नमो धर्माय बृहते कृष्णाय कुंतमेरसे पुरुषाय पुराणाय संख्य योगेश्वराय च
Offering obeisances.
Offering obeisances.
Te.
Te.
unto you. Ashisham Isha,
Ashisham Isha,
O topmost of all bestowers of benediction. Manave,
Manave,
under the Supreme Mind,
or Supreme Manu.
Karana Atmane,
Karana Atmane,
the Supreme Cause of all causes.
Nama,
offering obeisances.
Dharamaya,
under one who knows the best of all religion. Brihate, the greatest. Krishnaya, unto Krishna. Akuntamedase, unto one whose brain activity is never checked. Purushaya, the Supreme Person. Puranaya, the oldest of the old. Shankhya Yoga Ishvaraya, the master of the principles of Shankhya Yoga. Cha and translation. My dear Lord, you are the topmost of all bestowers of all benediction, the oldest and supreme enjoyer amongst all enjoyers. You are the master of all the world's metaphysical philosophy, for you are the supreme cause of all causes. Lord Krishna, you are the greatest of all religious principles, the supreme mind, and you have a brain which is never checked by any condition. Therefore, I repeatedly offer my obeisances unto you. The words Krishnaya Akuntamedase are significant in this verse. Modern sciences have stopped their brain work by discovering the theory of uncertainty. But factually, for a living being, there cannot be any brain activity which is not checked by time and space limitation. A living entity is called Anu, an atomic particle of the Supreme Soul, and therefore his brain is also atomic. It cannot accommodate unlimited knowledge. This does not mean, however, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a limited brain. What Krishna says and does is not limited by time and space. In Bhagavad Gita 7:26, the Lord says, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani chabutani mam tu veda nakaschana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me no one knows. Krishna knows everything, but one cannot know Krishna without being favored by him. Thus, for Krishna and his representative, there is no question of a theory of uncertainty. What Krishna says is all perfect and certain, and is applicable to the past, present, and future. Nor is there any uncertainty for one who knows exactly what Krishna says. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on Bhagavad Gita as it is, as spoken by Lord Krishna. And for those who are engaged in this movement, there is no question of uncertainty. Lord Krishna is also addressed herein as Ashisham Isha. The great saintly personalities, sages and demigods, are able to offer benedictions to ordinary living beings. But they in turn are benedicted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without being benedicted by Krishna, one cannot offer benediction to anyone else. The word Manave, meaning under the Supreme Manu, is also significant. The Supreme Manu in Vedic literature is Swayambhuva Manu, who is an incarnation of Krishna. All the Manus are empowered incarnations of Krishna, Manvantara Avatar. There are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma, 420 in one month, 5,040 in one year, and 504,000 Manus in the lifetime of Brahma. Since all the Manus are directors of human society, ultimately, Krishna is the supreme director of human society. In another sense, the word Manave indicates the perfection of all kinds of mantras. The mantra delivers the conditioned soul from his bondage. So simply by chanting the mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One can gain deliverance from any condition. Karanatmane, everything has a cause. The theory of chance is repudiated in this verse, because everything has its cause. There's no question of chance, because so-called philosophers and scientists are unable to find the real cause. They foolishly say that everything happens by chance. In Brahma Samhita, Krishna is described as the cause of all causes. Therefore, he is addressed herein as Karanatmane. His very personality is the original cause of everything, the root of everything, and the seed of everything. As described in the Vedanta Sutra 112, Janmadyasya Yataha, the absolute truth is the supreme cause of all emanations. The word Shankya Yogeshwaraya is also significant herein. For Krishna is described in Bhagavad Gita as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic powers. Without possessing inconceivable mystic powers, one cannot be accepted as God. In this age of Kali, those who have a little fragmental portion of mystic power claim to be God. But such pseudo-gods can only be accepted as fools, for only Krishna is the Supreme Person who possesses all mystic and yoga perfections. The Shankya Yoga system, popular at the present moment, was propounded by the atheist Kapila. But the original Shankya Yoga system was propounded by an incarnation of Krishna, also named Kapila, the son of Devahuti. Similarly, Dattatreya, another incarnation of Krishna, also explained the Shankya Yoga system. Thus, Krishna is the origin of all Shankya Yoga systems and mystic yogic powers. The words Purushaya Puranaya are also worthy of special attention. In Brahma Samhita, Krishna is accepted as the Adipurusha, the original person, or the original enjoyer. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is also accepted as Purana Purusha, the oldest person. Although he is the oldest of all personalities, he is also the youngest of all, or Navayogana. Another significant word is Dharmaya. Since Krishna is the original propounder of all kinds of religious principles, it is said, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Bhagavatam 6:3:19. No one can introduce a new type of religion, for religion is already there, having been established by Lord Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna informs us of the original Dharma and asks us to give up all kinds of religious principles. The real Dharma is surrender unto Him, and the Mahabharata is also said, Ye cha veda vidau vipra, ye cha yatma vidau jana, te varanti mahatmanam, krishnam dharmam sanatanam. The purport is that one who has studied the Vedas perfectly, who is a perfect vipra, or knower of the Vedas, who knows that spiritual life what actually is, speaks about Krishna, the Supreme Person, as one's sanatan dharma. Lord Shiva, therefore, teaches us the principles of Sanatana Dharma. So continuing with the prayers of Lord Shiva, then he's bringing out all kinds of significant elements within the personality of Godhead. So it's first on Krishnaya, Akunta made a say. His brain work cannot be stopped by any time or situation, any time or place. Because he knows all things, and so there's nothing that will get in the way of his appreciation or his determination within something. The modern scientist, Prabhupada points out, has brought up the element of uncertainty. And so Prabhupada says at this point their brain work actually stops. So we can understand just crunching numbers or trying to make some connections with something is not technically real brain work. That is just mechanics. Real brain work is being able to come up with a conclusion, to actually understand what is the cause of all things, what is the origin. Just like, let's say, one goes into the kitchen cleans the kitchen perfectly, arranges all the pots and utensils perfectly, gets out the vegetables and all those things, washes them, cuts them, grinds them, gets everything is really well done, down to the finest detail. In fact, it took him so many hours to do this. Really, 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 you know, exceptional work. But they never cook. Will you actually call that real, actual kitchen work? No, the idea of a kitchen, it produces something edible. Just so you cut vegetables. So just because they crunch numbers, or just because they notice that column's white and the floor's white, so there's a commonality between the column and the floor. That doesn't mean that's intelligence. Real intelligence is not stopped because you get to the cause of all causes. That's the principle. So what, yes? I think that from what I can, I mean, unless someone else can bring it out more, but just that it's all chance. You know, it could just happen. You know, it's just, there is this unlimited space that came from nobody knows from where, from an infinitesimal spot. And somehow or another, this infinitesimal spot contains everything. And then somehow or another in this ocean that's somehow or another created out of this somehow or another nothingness, a lightning bolt that's somehow or another created, because they don't mention a sun. You know, so how do you get clouds? And so then this hits the ocean. And then when it hits the ocean, it creates one protozoa, a one-cell living entity. And this one-cell living entity expands and then decides that, hey, it's getting boring in the ocean. So then they go onto the land and, hey, wouldn't it be great to fly? And, you know, all these different things. And so then in this way, it all happened. That's called lack of intelligence, you know. So that's the uncertainty. Because if it's certain, means then there is a conclusion, means then there is an application. See, that's the difficulty in the academic field. That is, it's the, how you say, it's the bane of the academic field. You could say it is the taboo of the academic field, is a certainty. Because if there's a conclusion, you know, other than a fact, you know, if you say, okay, Henry VIII was born in this year, died in this year, and as long as it's very clear the facts, there's no other alternative, then you could be very convinced about it and say it's very, you would say it very conclusively, but it's not, it's just a fact. You know, that's it. But if you have a conclusion, means then the intelligence will have to apply that conclusion into practical life. And that's something no academic wants to do. It's just not done. It means you apply it, okay, you practically run a class, you know, you check papers, you work out a grading system, you practically protect your chair so that nobody else gets it. You know, you practically get out of the building down into your car and get home. You know, so they do many things, but their academics is never practically applied. Because then it may make some gizmo and gadget, but what's the cause of that? Why does that work? What are the laws by which all their science works that they don't want to come to the conclusion? Because that means then you'd have to surrender to that supreme cause. Right? Because a lower cause always has to work in line with a higher cause. So if the supreme cause is there, then that means all other elements below that would have to be in line with that. And that's one thing they just absolutely don't want to do. Their whole academy is based on this one point. So that's why Prabhupada's saying is that they've stopped their brain work, modern. Because before, the idea is that's God's creation and how does it function and all this. Until they run into problems between good and bad and the functioning of the world, then there's a problem. But there was an idea that there was something. So they were actually, the idea is the Age of Enlightenment, there was more openness, but actually it's more closed. You just allow more variety of facts, that's all. But as far as conclusion, you're more narrow. Well, previous to that, there is the idea that the conclusion is it's God. So they were actually more broad-minded. That's the fun part of the mode of ignorance. It always makes what's wrong appeared right and what's right appeared wrong. So it appears that the modern man, modern academic, is so much more liberal in his thinking. But he's actually not, because he's very narrowly has to stay within that there can't be a conclusion. Like that. Well, the other, they may not know, but they know ultimately the conclusion. They just don't know the mechanics in between. Well, the modern studies mechanics in between, but can't understand the ultimate conclusion. So therefore, that's basically useless. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah. So, Krishna, his intelligence is not, there's no disconnection there. Because he knows everything. And so, therefore, what someone does and the reactions they get are never not connected. It's never chance. Someone performed an activity, the results they got are exact. Right? They exactly match the activity done, the mentality that's there. And as we see in previous verse, because of the mentality, therefore Krishna arranges you to be in situations that match that mentality. And then because of the attraction, the lack of attraction to Krishna, so that means the living entity being active, having desires, has to therefore be attracted to something else. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that Krishna makes you attracted to Maya. He just arranges that, since you don't want to know who he is, that you just forget him. So the living entity is not about to get bored, right? You know, it's just like, let's say the person is totally bored and there's no meaning to life. So what do? Right? They go out and do some wild activity to kill themselves. Right? So boredom just doesn't work for the living entity. You have to do something. So therefore, if God is not a feature in the life, so therefore all attraction, all interest is him. Therefore you have to turn to something else. It's just that simple. So God arranges for the demons to be demons by just, they don't remember him. And devotees become devotees because they remember him. Right? Very simple. Like that. Just by knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, you control the whole creation. Because everything else, the mechanics of the modes of nature take care. So here it also says that he's the lord of, you're the master of the world's metaphysical philosophy. So the Shankya means how everything works, how it actually functions, because the working element is Krishna. He's the cause of all that. So that means he's also the knowledge of all that. He's the working of all that. So you get all these nice elements all at once. Everything comes together in one place. So, Lord Shiva so expertly brings out various aspects of Krishna's qualities. Though in this, in one verse, much of the time he's talking about one principle, and then all the various aspects that go with that principle. So this is very, very special. Okay, so here also in Karanatmane, that his personality is the cause of everything. That he likes to do something, therefore that is pious. Right? He doesn't like something, therefore that is impious. Right? So therefore the Shastra will define what's pious, because that will elevate you. And elevating it towards what? The cause of all causes, the Supreme Lord. Right? And what's impious is not elevating you towards the cause, it's taking you deeper into the material cause. You think you're the controller and enjoyer. Right? Piety means I perform those activities that are based on what Krishna is the supreme cause and his internal potency, their interaction. Right? So that form, that activity, that's what is called, defined as pious. Right? In other words, what the Lord and his internal potency, how they interact with each other, that's called pious. Impious is going against that. Right? Does that make sense? That's the main point. Now, Within this, there's two aspects it's very important to note. One is the form and activities of their interaction, right, which is the form and activities of piety. But there's more important is the affection, because they're persons. So that affection and devotion exchanged between the Lord and His internal potency, that's the actual essential element of piety. So therefore, one can follow those activities given by the Lord for the Lord's satisfaction, and that's called devotional service. Right? So that's the ultimate piety. But one could also follow those same forms and activities recommended by Shastra, but not do them in connection with the Lord. So that's atheistic, right? That is because it's not connected with the person. Right? So that is you know, Lord Shiva is using words here, asuric. Is divine, that's devotional. And non-divine, that's asuric. So one can be very pious and do everything very properly according even to scripture in this material world, but it's still unproductive as far as devotional service. So, because what's happening, you're only seeing that I perform this activity, I get this result. So that's only half of the formula of causation, right? The Lord and the internal potency is the first two points. That reflection is there in our performing the activity and the material energy transforming. Right? So that's what is missing when in material piety. Because I think I did the pious activity, I got the pious result. Rather than I performed the activity recommended by Krishna and I'm doing it to please Krishna, therefore the material energy responds instead of as external energy, as internal potency, I get a devotional result for it. But since the mechanics are happening in external potency, I can see a material thing sitting in front of me. This is where it's missed. Right. So, it all goes back to the personality. Krishna likes things in a certain way, that's why they're done in that way. He doesn't like something, that's why they're not done in that way. That's why then you see in Gita even, of recommended activities, because there's the way he likes it, there's also ways you could do it. Like there's 10 ways you could cook it, the same sabji. But then there's the way you like to do it. So all 10 are bona fide. But then there's the way you like it. Right? So therefore Shastra gives this broad range of activities that are bona fide. But then there's what he himself personally prefers. So Gita, he says, in my opinion, it's this. That means this is the way he likes it. What the acharyas give us is the way he likes it. Right? So that's the whole point. How he likes it in Vrindavan is what the acharyas give. Other acharyas give how he likes it in Vaikuntha, or how he likes it in Ayodhya, or how he likes it in Dwarka. But our acharyas give how he likes it in Vrindavan. So that's why then it's there. It being the highest, it has connection with everything. Right? It's not that it has some parts and then things outside that is where the next Mathura has that. What's outside Vrindavan and Mathura, that's what Dwarka has. What's outside Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, that's what Ayodhya has. And what's outside Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, and Ayodhya, that's what Vaikuntha is. No. Braj contains everything that's in every realm, but in the way that Krishna personally likes it. Right? As Braja Krishna. It's got all those little nuances, but instead of it being a major thing, like Vrindavan is more opulent than you could probably say the whole spiritual realm combined. But it's not a prominent feature. It's just nice. It's just, that's where you know, it's just like, there's the person that goes into the 5-star hotel and is amazed by the lobby and amazed by everything and the elevator and the bathroom and everything like that. And then there's the person where that's just normal life. He wouldn't want to be in an environment less than that. So for him, it's not special. It's just that's the environment. So opulence is just, the environment in Braj. It's just, that's what facility you have. It's not that it's special. It's just, the best is just normal. Does that make sense? So therefore, because it is, you can deal with it in a way that you can't in the other realms, because there it's special. Right? Rules and regulations are there. Everybody follows things. Krishna gets up in the morning before the sun comes up in Braj. Right? He takes his bath. He eats his breakfast. He does it every day. Right? You know, Mother Yashoda cooks in the kitchen every day. Not one day in the kitchen, one day in the living room, one day she decides to do it on the roof. Right? No, it's every day in the kitchen. Right? She puts things in a pot. Right? The pot goes on the fire. She stirs the pot with a spoon. Rules are there. Norms are there. But they're not the prominent element. Therefore, there's things that may be done in a way that's unique to Braj that might not be done in another realm, where the rule is the prominent feature. Right? This is what's going on. So Krishna being the ultimate cause is because he, as the person, what he likes to do, that is the reason that everything happens in the cosmic creation. It's not by chance. If we say that, oh, that's okay, that's Vedic, but now we're in the modern age, so things are different, we can't do it in that way, what are you doing? You're disconnecting the present situation and activities and results from God. Right? So, another word in this case for modern is atheistic. Right? It's not some glorious position. It's called the lack of brain working of the so-called intelligent person. That's all it is. God is God. He's the supreme cause of everything, as much today as he was yesterday and still will be tomorrow. Right? Always. So that's the thing. It's all based on him as a person. Right? Nothing else. Him as a person. There's no other reason. So that's the thing, that's what's special about the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is that it's because he as a person likes it this way, that's why we do it. Right? So the rule is, do it the way Krishna likes. That's spontaneous devotional service. Do it how Krishna likes it. Do it because that's the rule, that's vital. That's all, that's the difference. So here Lord Shiva is bringing out all these very, very nice conclusions. And so then, as being pointed out here in the end of the purport, is the purport is, one who knows that spiritual life actually is, speaks about Krishna, the Supreme Person, as one's Sanatana Dharma. Any questions or comments? Yes. I see. Very bottom. Hello?
Thank you. Maharaj, you were speaking earlier about science and how it's it's useless because there's no ultimate conclusion.
Right.
So as devotees, what should be our approach to science and all its product? Because ultimately science is the facilitation of the senses to enjoy it better. How, as devotees, should we approach that?
How do we approach science as devotees? Means science is simply the physical of the metaphysical, how it works. The metaphysics is there, means God's the original cause. And then that comes down into the manifest in the physical form. So all science is simply the laws of God's cause of all, being the cause of all causes. In other words, how he likes things is how science works. Right? So science is just the facts of the laws, and then there's so many details. Art will be how you apply those laws. Because it's there, it has to be done. Like you say, you put something into the pot to cook it, but how you put it in the pot makes a difference on whether it goes in the pot or splashes or so many things, right? So that's the art. Right? Art is simply how you practically apply the science. The science is simply the laws on which the material energy functions, or practically actually just how energy functions, right? So for us, we don't see a problem with science and God, right? That's why we say the atheist, because why would there be a problem? They're only observing God's nature. They're not making it up. It's not that the person came up with a theory and then the material nature changed. All they do is observe what material nature does, right? They take something and spin it around for a few kilometers until it gets to a big speed and then smash it into something else, and then they watch what it does, right? That's all. You know, they do something, you know, a medical experiment or scientific experiment simply means you watch what happens. But it's speculative because you're not starting with Shabda. You don't know where to start. So you do something and see what it does, and do something else, see what it does. You go on and on and on. And then at some point, something works. And so then you go, ah, right? And then you start to put together things that everybody else has gone, ah, about. And then it starts to become a, you know, an area of science. You know, eventually it ends up with its own chair at the university, just because there's enough volume, right? Because you have to be, see, there has to be, you know, enough volume of material that you can write a 300-word paper with 500, you know, references. So that means you need a lot of material. So until it gets to that point, it's not considered a real topic. You know what I'm saying? So, but if you start with God, you're starting with the principle. Even if that's all you know, it works. Does that make sense? You know, like the farmer knows, you put the seed in the ground, you know, proper ground with water, it grows. He doesn't know why it grows. The scientist can tell you why it grows, but the scientist can't plant it and grow it. You know what I'm saying? You know, like that.
So then is science basically irrelevant, since we know that no. God is the cause, and we don't need to, like, you know,
no.
clash things together and go, ah.
Yeah. No, it means science is, means nothing in the creation is irrelevant. The point is its irrelevance is if you don't see it in connection with God. Just like, let's say you have a car. It's irrelevant if you don't see it in connection with God. It'll get you around from point A to point B, but if your point A and point B have nothing to do with God, then you're just wasting your life. Right? So science, if that's an area that can be used according to one's occupation and one's mentality, then fine. But everything's a science. You know, it means Dharma is a science. We try to make it into some social sentimental thing. It's a science. Right? A Brahman has a nature. He's going to act in a particular way. You deal with him according to his nature, things work. You don't deal with it, doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? It's science. Like, the businessman has to make profit. And he has to make a good amount of profit, not just a little bit. Right? So if he wants to do a business for the temple, he has to either make a lot of profit, or it has to be totally a charitable thing. Either one of these, to him, is profit. But in between, just making a little bit, making a, you know, hiring him, he's not a businessman, then he's a Shudra. He won't work. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the thing is therefore, but at the same time, the manager, because he's working on arrangements, he has to be able to make arrangements, and the other has to be able to make profit. So how to balance, in that situation, control and profit? So because it is a profit-generating thing, therefore the preference has to be given to the profit, not to the control. Right? Because control gets. Because the point is you're making a lot. This guy will do something. If he's happy, another one will do another one. So between 10 businessmen, you'll make a lot of money. Right? So you'll make way more than all 10 of them, but each one of them makes how much they're comfortable. That's science. It's science. It's documented in the scriptures. But we'll think, no, I'm in control, or I'm the businessman, or money is everything, or control is everything, and then there's no balance, and then there's no cooperation. So that's because the science isn't being followed. So science is how everything functions. It's just the mechanics. That's all science is. Right? In other words, the laws. Then within the laws, then there's so many fine points of how you can apply that law. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so different people, let's say you have the same principle, but there's so many arts, right? So many varieties of ways of cooking, even the same thing. And they come out very different, taste very different, and effect very different. It's because they're applying the art of the same science. in a sense. So variety comes in art, and effective, you know, results come from science. So if you don't know the science, your art's not going to work. Or at least you have to been working with it long enough or received it from someone else. You don't know why it works, you just know if you do that, it's great. You know, if you sing the melody like this, everybody gets excited. You don't know why. But there is a science that'll say exactly why, because this note hits on that in the convention with this, creates this emotion. There is a science. Does that make sense?
It's
so science is, we have no problem. That's why Nectar of Devotion is called the science of, you know, Bhakti Yoga. Bhagavatam is giving science, but we'll take it as sentiment. And science means if you don't end up with a gizmo or a gadget, it's not science. No, the real hard science is what creates the actual connection between the living entity and God, because that's what we are. Right? You want to deal in what's the actual medium. So we're spirit, and God's the supreme spirit. So that connection, that's the real science, the supreme science. Then you have the metaphysics, then you have the physics. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj, thank
yeah.
you.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. In the end of your class, you were saying how if one follows the rules, that's Vaidhi, but if one is doing to please Krishna, then that's right.
Yes.
If one follows the rules, because he knows the rules please Krishna, but he's stuck on the rules, but he overall he knows that the rules please Krishna, what is that?
Well,
is
would that be, okay.
Is that a middle category?
Means he's following the rules because he knows it pleases Krishna. So, but what's important, the pleasing Krishna, means the pleasing of Krishna on its own is the standard, and simply because following the rules pleases Krishna, or he wants to, through following rules, please Krishna. That'll make the difference. Right? Because, in other words, let us say you go into a situation, a formal situation, or into an unknown situation. So rules create a structure that you feel comfortable. You know that when the person walks in the room, then you stand up, you know, and you hold out your hand and say hello and this and that, introduce yourself. There's a form. So there is that element that their devotees in Vaikuntha feel comfortable when the form of exchange is rules. It's done on the platform of love. But the form of rules is important to them because it gives a structure and you can be very comfortable and relaxed. So you can be very, how you say, natural and practiced. You know, even you could use the word spontaneous in following the rules. But still the basis is still the rule, right? So that's why even those, those who are worshippers of Vaikuntha, they will also have that element of like rag, but it's not the rag we're talking about. Vrindavan is simply the emotion. All you have is the emotion. That's it. There is no other aspect. Everything's there, but that's not at all the thing. So how that emotion will move, where it will go, that takes so much more surrender than that you know that a form will guide it in a particular way. In other words, if you start an activity in a particular form, it still has to go through forms to change. Right? And you can identify where it changed and still, there's still a logic, everything, you know, moves. It can move very quickly, but it still follows a form. But emotions can change in a moment. What will happen, how it'll go, what will influence it, and, you know, it's just like Krishna's, you know, how you say, you see Krishna, right? And so emotions come up, and so one's attracted, one starts to walk towards that situation, and then you see another devotee that's in another, you know, group or another rasa, then walk up to Krishna and start interacting. What happens to the emotion at that time? Right, it has to completely change and everything. So it's very, very intense. The intensity is far, far greater. So the surrender that this is being just for Krishna has to be there. Because you're doing it like that, then actually Krishna's more pleased because it's all about Him, 100%. So therefore then all these aspects can move according to what tastes, because He's unlimited, so the way the tastes can move also, and in variety, is never exactly the same. That takes more surrender. Well, Vaikuntha, you know basically what's going to happen, but because He's Navayovana, even the same thing happens, it's ever fresh. So there's no one will get bored. Right? Like that. So, therefore, it's a matter of what's the point. It means you like to do this to please Krishna. So someone could follow, he likes to follow the rules to please Krishna. So that would be the spontaneous aspect within rules, within Vaidhi. You know, the natural, more mature. But still the spontaneous means it's not dependent upon the rules. You follow rules, but you're not dependent upon the rules. That's why it could start in one way and then completely change into something else. It doesn't have any logic of mechanics. Does this make sense? You know, in other words, you say something and then that word has a particular meaning. I take that word and put it into a different context. So then the conversation keeps changing. But you can see the mechanics of the change, right? So that's the masculine environment. Feminine environment means the words have connotation of emotions. So even though you've used one word, in the context that's in it generates a particular emotion, then you can take that emotion and then start another aspect of the discussion based on that emotion, though the words and the scenario being used are totally different. That's why when women have conversations just on their own, you know, it's like they're in one room and the man's in the next room and you hear them talking. You can't figure out what they're talking about. It doesn't make any sense. There's no logic. And when women hear men talking like that, it's just totally boring. Right? So the principle comes down is that if the emotion can change like that, but each area, there's how you would function in that. But then, because the emotion can move it to another, then another set of application will apply. But in the one, its mechanic functions goes to the next. You can see a logic. So Vaikuntha simply means that you're comfortable in that logic, you know, of movement, of the mechanics of the things. While Braj means you're surrendered enough that you can just work on that emotion because you have nothing to gain from the other one. You're a comfort, right? You see, is because that you're on the same planet as the Lord, or you're in the same form, or same opulence, or associate. So therefore, there's some element that you're comfortable with that. So Vaikuntha always carries that, but Braj doesn't carry that. So then you end up with it pleases Krishna. So it moves in that way because he's interacting with the feminine. So the feminine becomes the prominent. While in Dwarka, you're interacting pleasing Krishna. So the masculine is the prominent. So therefore, Vaikuntha will follow that masculine form, while Braj follows the feminine. That takes more surrender. Right? You know, and just like women can work with each other in a very extremely formalized environment, they don't know each other. Right? It has to be more formal than the men's environment. But if you're putting in the feminine environment where it's just going to, you don't know how it's going to go, you would have to be totally surrendered and have such deep affection for whoever is the lead lady to be able to survive the emotions as it moves. Does that make sense? So that's the uniqueness of that. So what you're saying, it just depends upon whether it is your advanced stages of Vaidhi, you know, if that's their thing, or your beginning stages of Rag. It just depends upon which is their, how do they see it, the end. Is that okay? Does that work? Okay, so we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prindanti.